Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And boy, do we need it today. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle. Hey, Michelle.
Hello, Scott. Hi, everybody.
There were things that I was going to talk about today, but for those who celebrate Happy Indigenous Peoples Day, Native American Day, and obviously the world is in strife at the moment, and what better podcast than Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World than, and I don't know how, Michelle and I don't plan some of these shows in advance, and this is one of those where we had not talked about this, but my heart goes out to everybody. I'm sure Michelle's yours does too, to everybody negatively affected by all of this. And on top of that, I wanted to point one thing out. As an observer, I'm certainly got my own preferences, for lack of a better way to put it. Setting all of that aside, I am an observer of the news, and I'm astutely aware, by the way, that when wars like this, and it is a war, when a war like this happens, I want everybody to remember there is a lot of misinformation, disinformation. There is, stuff that is going out, coming out of Israel, coming out of the United States, coming out of Turkey, coming out of Iran, the UK. Take some of this, please. Don't take it all as face value. And if you need to take a break from the news, please do that. So, right. Yes. There are a lot of times, and I've caught myself doing this, just glued. I actually went to the gym today, and that's all over the news. Fox, CNN, you pick it. And it's all this, that, and the other thing. And frankly, unlike many things that I've seen before, I'm certainly seeing it periodically, but unlike many of the things that I've seen before, the graphic nature of what is being broadcast, the abductions, the killings, this is terrorism, folks. And there's a reason it's called terrorism. And there's a part of me that wants to reach out to everybody and say, it's important that you see these things, but it's also important that it don't let it dehumanize you, that you don't let it desensitize you, and that you don't get mired into, oh my God, the world is coming to an end. it is what it is right now. And there's a lot of things that, for lack of a better way, you're going to get information out there that just isn't accurate. I go back to, by the way, when we had that national warning that went out here in the United States.
Yes.
I actually had people saying, when that goes off, turn your phone off because it's going to activate the stuff in your body from your COVID vaccine and things are going to happen to you. I'm here, folks, and nothing happened. It's things like that. In times of dire straits, in times of conflict like this, again, your own well-being, your own peace of mind is really incredible. You're entitled to your opinions. You're entitled to your positions. There are agendas behind everything you're hearing as well, too. Not to dismiss it, facts are facts, presuming we're getting them accurately. I know that Israel is calling this their 9/11. I know we've talked about it on the show, Michelle. You know, I know that when 9/11 happened here, I was on my way to federal court, which because of that, when we learned it was a terrorist attack, everybody went into lockdown. We actually, you know, those of us at the courthouse were ushered outside. And I've never seen an armed response like this. You know, we were actually being guarded with soldiers. I've never seen anything like this and how quickly the deployment happened. And you know, people can dismiss that Israel's calling it their 9/11, but when you look at the numbers proportionally, it's actually they've lost proportionally to their citizenry, their population, they've lost more than we did in 9/11. And so I'm not here to judge it, dismiss it, accept it. I'm saying you're going to hear lots of stuff. And at least as we're recording this right now, I believe the White House is still in blackout because of the Americans who've been killed verifiably over there. Please, just if you need to talk to somebody, reach out. If you need to get, this is a great time if you get the need for a mental health professional to reach out to them. What is that, the emergency number again, Michelle, for people needing mental health?
Well, there's the National NAMHSA. There's also the suicide hotline, which I'll look up. I don't have it. Oh, nine. What is the new one? Nine. It's not 9/11. Not 911.
Is it 811?
Is it 811? That's a really good question. I will find it out right now.
I can look it up here. Nope, the 811 is Dig Alert here.
Yes. It is 988.
988. There you go. You know, we've talked about it before, but again, please, I just want everybody to keep your own sanity about you. Let's not add to the problems that you already may have by suddenly identifying. If you're from Israel, if you're from the Gaza Strip, that's a whole different issue because now you've got friends and family directly there. Exactly. And I know that there are political and religious overtones to all of this. But sometimes we catastrophize, right?
Right.
And so I just want to reach out and tell everybody that both Michelle and I have a lot of compassion, sympathy. I know there are those of us, I'm one of them. I've admitted it on the show when our 9/11 happened. I get very angry. I watch these images on the screen and I get very angry. And Michelle has cautioned me on for other reasons, had nothing to do with this. But, you know, Michelle has cautioned me, do not act when you're angry.
It's true.
And, if you know, for those of you that feel that, reach out to somebody, talk to them, go to the gym and blow off steam, walk around the block and turn off the news sometimes.
Yes.
Just turn it off and get some distance.
Yes. Good advice. Good advice.
I also want to thank everybody. We are approaching 9,500 views already on our podcast. Our audience size has gone up tremendously.
Yes.
And I think it's because, frankly, those of you on Spotify who've done Spotify searches, and Spotify is now actively promoting our podcast as well. The interesting thing, and Michelle and I were chatting the other day about this, is that our audience has changed a bit because second, right, we've got the U.S. that we know we've got an audience there, but Taiwan is now number two.
Yay, my Taiwanese friends. Yay.
Yeah, so welcome to all of you who've joined our U.K. and Canadian and Australian and German and Japan audience. There are others, but those are the top ones in there. We really do appreciate it. This is one of our passion projects. We're not making an income from this. We do this because we care. And so thank you all for supporting this. So please like, share, do whatever you need to do on your particular podcast platform to keep the show going. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I will never forget my night at the Taipei Night Market with my Taiwanese friends. So it's so nice to see we have an audience in Taiwan. It's an incredible, incredible country.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Anything else that you want us to talk about before we jump into today's topic? No pun intended.
I think we should jump into the deep end, as they say.
So today, it's very interesting. You know, Michelle and I will brainstorm. I want to give everybody a little background on this. Michelle and I brainstorm usually months in advance of what our shows are going to be like.
Yes.
And I was actually talking to Michelle one day about some of the work that I do when I do live appearances and I do training with some of my public agency folks. And one of them is I work with lifeguards. I work with lifeguards on their mindset. I work with lifeguards on their focus. I work with lifeguards on their emergency action plans, et cetera, et cetera. And so Michelle said, that would be great. Why don't we do a show on lessons from lifeguarding?
Yes. How does it apply to life?
And one of the things that Scott did in his prior life, I think I've mentioned this before. I always wanted to grow up and be a doctor. I think I would have been a great doctor. I never went to med school. My wife has actually suggested to me, you know, you can still go.
You could.
10 years later, Scott will be a doctor. You know,
that is true.
But in the process of exploring that option for me, I worked at a regional hospital in the emergency room, and my job, among others, was to assist surgeons of all kinds in doing emergency surgery. Then I would leave that shift, and I worked on a paramedic unit.
Yes.
And you did paramedic things back in the day. This is before, by the way, I'm this old. This is before the fire departments had paramedic units. Right, back then, there were just there were fire departments where they had, you know, ladders and engines and trucks, and they went to situations, but they didn't. It wasn't a paramedic situation. Now they have that. We actually were the emergency medical arm of the fire department. We'd go to the fire station. We had our own station, but we'd go to the fire station and hang out with these guys because when they'd respond, we'd have to respond. And because of that, I'm very capable, very able, and very confident when I talk to my lifeguards and I ask them one question. Do you understand that your title is lifeguard?
The
promise, the guarantee, the expectation, the aspiration is in your name, guarding life. And, you know, it's very interesting to suddenly watch their eyes because, you know, it's certainly they don't walk into it with the Baywatch approach.
Yes.
You know, they're into it because they get it. But, you know, these lifeguards come in all ages. You know, the youngest lifeguards I've trained, by the way, are 16 years old.
Yeah, wow.
Can you imagine being 16? Imagine back when you were 16. Could you save a life? Literally, that's what it is. Could you save a life?
I don't think so.
And I applaud all of them for doing it, but it's a real eye-opener when I ask them, you know, about have any of you actually ever done CPR? Because back when I did it, we freaking did CPR. There was no equipment-assisted CPR. It's like we did full chest compressions and we put one mouth on another and breathe. And we got thrown up on and they defecated and they urinated, right? It's a heart attack.
So fun.
Right? By the way, this was pre-AIDS. And so you can imagine what happened, just as a quick aside. All of us who had been through this, when AIDS came out and was formally announced, we all went through a waiting period of like, oh my God, do you know how many times I was covered in blood and other things?
I know.
Unprotected, right? We're not using masks when we did mouth to mouth. So I mentioned these things to the lifeguards and their eyes get really big.
Right.
And I say that to all of you to give you some background of what we're going to talk about today, because as I work with lifeguards, one of the big things that I do is I use not only anecdotal situations, but a lot of metaphors that what they're doing as a lifeguard carries over into their everyday life.
Yes.
And how they walk through the world. So you know, I made some quick little notes here. I thought I'd go through these with you, Michelle, and kind of let you jump in whenever you feel appropriate. But to basically discuss how to take the concept of lifeguarding, we're not going to teach you how to jump in. We're not going to teach you zones and scanning and all the things that I have to talk about. But to put in place your own essentially emergency action plan.
Yes.
You know, lifeguards all have what's called an EAP.
Ah.
And it's a wonderful thing for all of us to have. It's an EAP. That means when they sense something is wrong, when they sense something is not ordinary, they may not know what the problem is. And that's the beauty of this. What we teach them to do is to respond to things that are not ordinary.
Okay.
Which means, for example, someone sitting in a chair looking into the pool, they see something on the bottom of the pool. They must, at that point, engage their emergency action plan. They blow a whistle. That tells everybody else that there might be a problem. The pool is immediately shut down, and the lifeguard jumps in and pulls up whatever is on the bottom of the pool. 911 is called. I mean, there are all kinds of things that happen. And it's a wonderful, I think, approach to our own lives. And I'll tie this in with what I said at the beginning. Look, Israel's at war. That's not ordinary. And yet, it's been going on for thousands and thousands of years. This is not new conflict. It's just an escalated
escalation.
And it's got, you know, as we move into different types of weaponry, it's got broader ramifications. And there are all these things. This is out of the ordinary. Lifeguards, when they see something out of the ordinary, don't overreact. And that's one of the biggies here. They do react, and then they respond. They move from reaction to response. And there's a time frame for them doing this, by the way. You know, they're expected to recognize something out of the ordinary, respond, and recover, right? Within within 20 to 30 seconds.
Right.
That's it. Right. So, and it depends on how they're trained, but let's just say 10 seconds right now. A 10 seconds recognition phase.
Right.
And then they're very, we don't want them screaming and throwing their hands in the air and going, oh my God, blah, right?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
They stay calm and they react. And so I call it staying afloat in chaos. And it's literally a mindset that they're looking for a problem. They know, right? If there are no problems in the water, nobody needs a lifeguard.
Right.
You don't need a lifeguard when things are going good.
Right.
You need the lifeguard to help put constraints and boundaries and enforce rules and rescue when it's necessary to do so. And so one of the things that I work with my lifeguards is consistent, reliable, and sustainable training. Do you know what tools that you have as a lifeguard to recognize, assess, respond, etc.? Now, they all wear, by the way, a little rescue belt that is on their waist. Okay. And I actually ask them to treat that the way soldiers do in the military when they field strip their guns. The really good soldiers can do that with their eyes closed and do it by touch and by muscle memory. So that they know when something happens, they can clean it. They can do whatever they need to do. And it's just second nature. I wonder how many of our listeners, by the way, have a mental health stress response, muscle memory toolkit. That's what this show is about. I mean, it fits right in with what we've been talking about. And it starts with breathing.
Yes.
And I will tell you, that if you don't mind, Michelle, I will pass on something I had never heard before. And we have talked before about box breathing. Right?
Yes.
And we've talked before about the 4-7-8 breathing, et cetera. I have never heard of a physiological sigh before.
Physiological sigh.
S-I-G-H. Well, it's more than that. And here's the interesting thing.
Okay.
It entails two in-breaths and one out-breath, okay. But it is done to immediately reduce stress and anxiety. And you breathe in through your nose, a full inhale, and then you breathe in again, a second inhale before you exhale. So it's a breathe in, and then a second inhale, and then a sigh. This is the physical part of this, the sigh out through your mouth like you're breathing out through a straw. I like to do it for a count of 10. And the amazing thing about this, I've been playing with this now for the last few days, it only takes doing this two or three times.
Oh.
And it is...
Before you get what? A calm?
But yeah, I mean, it's like that's why it's called a physiological sigh. When you think about how we breathe anyway, right? If it's that sigh of relief. And so it's one of those things that combats anxiety. And at least what I've studied, it comes out that, among other things, Stanford Medicine has done a study on this.
Oh,
I'd never heard of it before. So
I haven't either.
It has been working for me. I've been going through some stressful and anxious times, and it helps. Again, I have no idea if we're going to call it a placebo at this point, but I will tell you, it's a study from Stanford Medicine that has suggested that this physiological, it's also called a cyclic sigh, actually does empirically combat anxiety. And I'm just going to read what I'm reading right now. It came from David Spiegel, who's a neurobiologist. Pardon me. It comes from David Spiegel, a neurobiologist by the name of Andrew Huberman. And I'm going to mess this name up. Melise Yilmaz-Balbin. And what they're saying is that when you practice this style of controlled breathing, they're saying for 5 minutes, it lowers your anxiety, improves your mood, and decreases the rates of breathing at rest, which automatically creates overall body calmness. Mm. So again, it's out of Stanford Medicine, and I pass this on to all of our listeners today, because that's part of your toolkit. Whether you practice that one or box breathing that we've talked about before, or the 4-7-8 from Dr. Weil, pick what you got to use this stuff.
Right.
And so in a lifeguarding situation, it's all great that you have all this rescue equipment. If you don't use it,
right,
things are going to go bad at some point.
Okay.
And the other thing that, and you've talked about this before, Michelle, you don't just assemble the tools and then wait to deploy them when an emergency happens.
Right.
My lifeguards practice constantly.
You practice,
it is
yes.
Continual practicing until it becomes muscle memory,
yes,
for them.
Yes. Yes. When I used to, so I teach a lot of breath work in conjunction with either anxiety or pain management. And I will have clients report back to me, oh, I did the breath work, but it didn't work. And I said, well, tell me what happened. So when they were in a panic attack or when they were having high pain, they were using the breath, but they weren't practicing before they were in tense crisis. They were just using it when you were in crisis. Well, it's going to take a lot longer for a body that doesn't have muscle memory to use that tool effectively in the crisis moment. Like, the point is we practice, we use our tools regularly.
And here's the way I explain it to my lifeguards. Imagine something happens and you need to move or go somewhere quickly and your shoes aren't on.
Yes.
Right? You're not even going to think about it. You're going to put your shoes on, presuming they're not slip-ons. You're going to put your shoes on, tie them without thinking about it, and get out.
Yes.
If you don't know how to tie your shoe, you kind of intellectually you've been told about it, right? That's not going to happen. And so I want the muscle memory.
Makes sense.
Much like when you drive or when you tie your shoes. And it's a mindset, because what this does is it helps you, it certainly helps the lifeguards, handle unexpected situations with grace.
Uh-huh.
right? Do you want, right? Do you want your police officers? Do you want your firefighters? Do you want your lifeguards? Do you want your emergency responding people freaking out? No, you want them coming in with a relaxed, I got this attitude.
Well, not just that, but let's say we've all been in organizations where people like control and order to their day, and a client calls last minute or an emergency happens or there's a change in schedule, and you've got that coworker who just reacts so poorly to any change in the environment. And that's just not, change is inevitable, and being able to react with grace, even to simple changes at any organizational level, right? Or, you get a bill in the mail that you weren't expecting. Do you handle that with grace? Do you know how to calm down, make sure that it's okay, et cetera, without freaking out on everybody in your home?
Well, I think it was, you guys have heard me talk about my love of astronauts and space. And, I think it was Chris Hadfield, one of the astronauts, who said, there's no situation that we as humans can't make worse.
Boy, is that true.
And so, one of the things, again, is lifeguards are there expecting something bad to happen.
Right.
They do what they can to prevent that. They do what they can to lessen the consequences. But they're prepared to react and respond when a situation is out of the ordinary. And they might not even know. It might just be a doll on the bottom of the pool. It might be a piece of loose clothing. It might be, somebody's gone in with, the little waiters or whatever, and it's gone to the bottom. It might be a person. They don't know. Right. The point is, they don't know.
Right.
They respond to what's not ordinary, and they do so with calmness and with grace and with a built-in confidence that they got this.
So applying that to life, if we could respond to what is not ordinary with grace and skill and effectiveness, think about how much more we're going to be able to keep our shit together.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, who would you be without the drama?
Right. Makes sense.
The next thing is, and this is very big for me, is the art of communication. Mm-hmm. It's very important. When I talked about the emergency action plans that are put in play, there's a reason that they blow a whistle. Right? It's to get everybody's attention, number one. But if there's the way they blow the whistle, this emergency action plan, they're also telling their support system, their network, I need you. Come into play now. And they don't have to communicate it anymore. Yeah. And so they have this network of support already built in, and they practice this.
Yeah.
And, one of the things that I don't think we've talked about a lot on this show is the support system that's so critical for particularly patients that you work with, Michelle. Mm-hmm. Even if you're the support system, I know that it's, I don't think of it as a support system, but it is. I'm more like the guy that works with my clients that holds them accountable.
Uh-huh.
But I'm always there, right? They can always reach out. So there is a built-in unspoken support system to this.
Right.
You're not in this alone. No person is an island, to use the old trite saying. If you don't have a support system, now would be the time to think about what would that look like? Who do I want to rely on? How do I want this to look? I'm going through, we've talked about Joan Halifax before when we did the 9 Contemplations of Atisha, and I'm reading her book. It's a tough book for me to get through, by the way, Being with Dying. And I'm doing it anyway. And it's very interesting in a good way, I think. We'll see how it all turns out. I'm almost done with it. But, there's a lot of discussion of holding space for someone else. There's a whole discussion of where I am in the book right now of the support system around the person who's actively dying, so that they don't die alone.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you got to have a support system.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, don't you find, in the grief setting, that being able to share with somebody is so critical.
Absolutely. In fact, grief groups where other people have lived experience, I think to a certain extent supersedes your community. When your community doesn't have a lot of lived experience, going to a grief group where people know what it feels like in their body to go through what you're going through is vital to your survival. Same thing with a cancer support group.
Yeah.
Or when you have a particular illness, when somebody in your family has a particular illness that is very difficult or life lasting, having a support group of people, a community of people, it's very different than having coffee with your friend who's never experienced that illness or never experienced that type of grief or doesn't know what it's like to have a child die or a parent die. It's very different. So
and
community
again,
of lived experience.
And again, without going, I'm not going to go into any details about it, but you and I have supported each other privately through our respective grief situations and
yes.
challenges and whatever. I think it's important when you talk about this commonality. It was,
yes.
You know, one of the big things I heard from you was, Scott, you're not going crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll get through this.
It's like, oh my God, right?
Yes. Yes. But you feel like you're going crazy when you're dealing with big things like cancer and ALS and Parkinson's and grief and cancer. You feel like you're going crazy because the world is sort of moving on at their normal tick.
Yeah.
Or like the people that are very much affected by what's going on in Israel right now because they have a loved one there. They're
yep.
going to feel like they're crazy because the rest of the world is just kind of moving on with their normal daily whatever.
It was very interesting that you say that because I'm at the gym, I'm working out, and all the TVs are on. They got a bank of TVs up where you can watch everything. And, you know, here's CNN with all the dire news. Then there's another TV. Then there's Fox with all of their news. Then uh-huh. there's another channel with all of their news. And the one, so they're CNN. The second channel was NFL football.
Yes. Right.
And the commentators are on there and they're joking. And it's like, you know what? Life goes on.
I know. But you feel crazy when other people are just kind of continuing on. Like life is normal. I will never forget the man that I worked with or a colleague of mine worked with where he got really mad. The night his wife died, he was driving by a 24-hour McDonald's that was just open 24 hours. And he got mad that McDonald's was still open. And he knew it was crazy and he knew it didn't make any sense. And he knew McDonald's wasn't good, didn't know his wife had died. He had no connection
yeah.
to that McDonald's. But you just get pissed that the world doesn't stop to recognize what you're going through.
And again, this is where talking to somebody, whether
yes.
it's a group or an individual. I'll tell you, I'll go back to, I know I've yammered on about it a bunch, but my knee surgery, right?
Yes.
I went into it so naively, came out of it, helpless, hopeless, all, you know, the pain. And there was somebody that my wife actually, she contacted them because she had read that this other lady's husband went through the same thing. And they started sharing stories. And it was like, oh, my God, I'm not
yeah.
crazy. This
yeah,
is not,
exactly.
it's not like that unique. It's actually
right.
part of the recovery. And so what I was able to do, another individual that we know went through a different surgery, had nothing to do with the knee, but a different surgery. And this individual was talking, right? Communicating. This is what we're asking you to do. And I was able to help her because I was a little bit ahead of her in effectively communicating with her doctor, the SUDS scale, the fact that it, you know, her numbness was feeling like I called it a sleeve. You know, when my knee hurts, it feels like a sleeve of numbness that comes around it. And she had never heard that before, but she said, that's exactly what it feels like where it is. And so, you know, in a high pressure situation, you don't have to identify things. post-mortem, when you deconstruct this and you talk to folks and you talk to your doctor, by the way, I will say this, one of the best support systems I had post-surgery was the physician's assistant, where I went into this, I went in for the surgery follow-up and I was in such pain, I'll admit it, I cried in this office. I was scared. The pain was there. And this physician's assistant stopped everything. She said, I'm not even, how about I tell you my story? And then she started telling me what she was going through. And there was that connection.
Yes. And you get, when you find somebody that is struggling with something in your art of communication, the subtlety is, if they can get through this, I can get through this. Yep. So it's not just that you're sitting there wallowing about whatever you're experiencing. And it's that if they can get through this one day at a time, I can get through this one day at a time. That's the beauty.
And there's one last thing with the art of communication that I teach my lifeguards. And that is that when you know that that communication structure is in place.
Yeah.
It brings a level of trust and confidence to what you're doing as well, because you know they've got your back.
Yes, yes.
Right? And I can only speak for myself, but, you know, I have some people, it's like, bring it on, right? I love you unconditionally. Bring it on. You want to be an ass? I'm here. I'll listen to that. You want to complain? I'm here. You want to be angry? I'm here. Because I know it'll pass.
Yes.
And, yes. You know, I'm Michelle and I have that kind of relationship where we share a lot. Right. And as uncomfortable as it might be for me in any given time, I feel better when I'm done.
I'm glad to hear that, Scott.
You're a good therapist, Michelle. Although you're not my therapist, you're a good therapist.
I'm a good friend.
You're a good listener. All right. So the next thing that I work with lifeguards that I think is transferable to all of our listeners is something called resilience and adaptability. And this is, you know, you can have the best laid plans and shit just happens.
Yes.
And it's the ability to slough it off. We've talked about the water off the back concept like a duck before. And to keep going. We have used it in a sports context. And in fact, I talked to my lifeguards about what we've done on the show, Michelle, where, you know, the really good basketball players at key moments will make a shot and they'll frickin' miss.
Uh-huh.
Right? They don't fall on the ground and start, you know,
don't play the rest of the game.
And don't play the rest of the game. So there's a resiliency and adaptability to all this.
That's
because as I like to tell my folks, there are ever changing tides of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen next.
That's true.
So again, it's preparation, 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 preparation. I don't know how else to emphasize. A good lifeguard is prepared.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that they're predicting everything. They're prepared for what can happen.
Right, right.
And when it goes bad, and it will.
Right.
Because, you know, I've actually joked with all of my lifeguards, I can make every one of your pools and I can make your beaches completely safe.
How?
All we have to do is take the people out of it.
I was going to say, it's got to be something like that.
It did. I just take all the human beings out of it.
And they're totally safe.
You know, I know this sounds bizarre because you think of lifeguarding, you immediately think of a pool, but I've got a number of agencies that I work with where they're beach cities.
Beach cities,
and,
yes.
And when the sharks come in and attack the baby seals.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother, it's like, what the hell do you do with that? What the hell do you do with the riptides? What do you do, you know, with the jellyfish that, because of the warming waters, start showing up?
Right.
Life changes. Life keeps going on. And I've always loved the line from Jurassic Park from Jeff Goldblum. Nature finds a way. Right? The world keeps going.
It does.
And so you have to be, you can't just stop. You missed the shot. You got to keep going. You might feel like crap. You might be disappointed. You might be sad.
Right.
But life goes on.
Right. Resiliency and adaptability.
Yeah.
It's so applicable to just handling life's ups and downs with the same thing we were talking about earlier, the grace.
And then the last thing that I wanted to bring up, and it may be a shorter show tonight, I guess we're at almost into 40 minutes right now, but it's the balancing act that I talk to my lifeguards about, and the fact that, you know, the waves out, particularly at the beach, the waves get rough. There are riptides that they have to swim, not against, but they have to swim
sideways
to counteract. Uh-huh. And it's a mental discipline of being able to say, here are the boundaries for my mental and emotional well-being.
Uh-huh.
This is what works and what doesn't. Not everybody can be a lifeguard. Again, right. You know, I remember years ago, first time I showed up, and I had a 16-year-old lifeguard, and it was like, oh my God, he doesn't even drive. He doesn't have his driver's license yet. And we're gonna put him in a situation to save a life. He doesn't freaking drive.
Wow.
And I have to have a balancing act between scaring the hell out of these people.
Right.
So that they take it seriously.
Right.
And also at the same time, equipping them with all these tools we're talking about. Right. I, by the way, talk to them about Wim Hof breathing.
Oh, right.
You know, the lifeguards go through, lifeguards go through Red Cross training, et cetera, et cetera. Then I ask them, how long can you hold your breath underwater? I expect them to know that. I expect them to know to the second how long they can hold their breath underwater. I expect them to know how long a 7-year-old can hold the breath underwater.
Right.
Now, things are going to change depending on, you know, what the activity is. But, you know, and then I explain to them with Wim Hof, and I happen to practice Wim Hof breathing. You don't have to, but you can look it up. He's known as the Iceman. You know, you'd be amazed how long you can hold your breath on the out-breath after you've expelled the air. You'd be amazed. You buy yourself another 30 seconds. That could save a life.
Wow.
Right? So we all think, by the way, and this goes to this balancing act, we all think of holding your breath.
Right.
And then holding it.
Right.
And it's how long can you hold your breath? Well, there's the inhale. Then there's the holding your breath. Then there's the exhale.
Exhale.
And then there's the holding your breath.
Right.
And it's like suddenly again, all the, you know, these lifeguards realize, oh my God, I've got more capability than I thought I did.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing I want to pass on to our listeners is you are much more capable of doing much more than you think you can do.
I love that.
And it's practice. You're going to get mental and emotional well-being with practice. We talked about the breathing. You know, do you meditate? I go out and I walk my labyrinth. Periodically, I sage my house and my labyrinth. You know, Michelle and I, by the way, it's become a ritual. We for the most part, talk every week. We share our personal stories and what's going on. And when the waves get rough,
right?
I know if I needed to, I could text or call Michelle, and she knows that she can do the same thing for me.
Absolutely.
Even some of the silliest things.
Right.
Right. It's
yes.
And I don't want everybody to think it's just the tough times. Part of this whole resiliency, adaptability, this balancing act. You know, one of the things that I love doing with my lifeguards when they're sitting in a room is they all come in. For the most part, this is a seasonal job, by the way.
Right.
There are some situations that have aquatic centers where it's full time, but a lot of them it's seasonal, and that's they're right. There, right? They train right before the summer months. They do the summer and then they're gone. And I don't even know if I'll see them again. And every time, the first meeting that I have with any lifeguards group is I let them come in and they sit down, and they're obviously going to find their friends from school, or they're going to find the people they've worked with before. And then I make them get up and move and sit next to someone they don't know.
Right.
And I make them introduce themselves because I want to enforce upon them. I want to emphasize with them, this is your support group. You need to know them.
Yeah.
You don't have all a clue. Them. You don't have a clue who you're going to be working with. And right. You need to know they have your back, whoever it is. And you need to all know that you've trained the same, that it's a systematic, consistent, sustainable approach to saving a life. And it will keep you from going crazy. When something goes wrong and you start being accused of doing something wrong that has caused harm to somebody, and you can sit back and you may have doubts, you may have fears, you may have your own imposter syndrome. You can sit back and say, hey, I did it right. I made the best decisions I could under the conditions that I had presented to me at the time. Consequences happen, right? You can. Yes. We've talked about this, by the way, with Annie Dukes and her thinking and bets.
Right.
There's decision making. There's good decision making. And then there are consequences, and they don't necessarily all tie together. You can make the best decision and still have crappy outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't judge, at least I'm trusting, we don't judge the decision based on the outcome.
Right.
We judge the decision based on the information that's known to us at the time.
That
we
makes
do the
a lot
best.
Of sense.
We do the best that we can.
Yes, we do. Or that's what we're encouraging you to do in your life as you listen to this podcast, is you learn to do the best you can in your life. To live with the consequences, to live with the mistakes, to be resilient. Stay afloat in the chaos.
All right. That brings us to the end of the show. It's gone very quickly for me. I don't know about you, but next week, we are going to do a topic that I also love called Stress and the Art of Improvisation.
Yes.
Life lessons from comedy. And both Michelle and I love this concept. So we're going to be talking about some things that you can do and take some life lessons away. We'll talk about improvisation and how that works with you. Until then, please, again, like, share, promote us on your social media and podcast platforms. Let everybody know that we're here so we may continue to serve you and continue to grow. And with all that, be well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.